Welcome back, everyone, to another Xamarin Show. I'm your host, James Montemagno, and with me, I'm super excited, digitally, friend of the show, Simon Yeager. He's a technical evangelist, kind of with a specialty, I'm going to say. I'm just going to throw it out there in the Microsoft graph, and I'm super crazy excited. Our first ever digital guest. Simon, how's it going?
Good, man. Super stoked to be a part of something first, like that first Skype interview. Super happy to be on, man.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm not sure where to look. Should I look here? Should I look at this big screen? You can't even see what I'm doing inside the booth. It's kind of cool. But you're literally on 14 monitors inside of Channel 9 right now, which is pretty cool.
Awesome.
I'm going to keep looking, nice. Like probably behind me, as if you're here with me. It's going to be great.
Nice, yeah.
So sure.
You're the voice in my head.
You're looking super fancy. I like it.
You?
For the graph. And the reason I wanted to bring you on is because I saw a tweet from you not too long ago. You were talking about the Microsoft Graph, this awesome app that you had built with Xamarin. And we have talked a lot about, on the Xamarin blog, a lot about Azure AD, a lot about getting stuff from your tenants, kind of building out some applications. But I'd never seen a full application built out. When I took a look and I downloaded the sample, I saw you playing around with that. I got really excited. I was really into it. So I had to have you on. And it was funny because I think I missed out on you being here in Redmond by like a day. Originally.
Yeah, literally, like when I was at the airport, I found your tweet when I was at the airport back home. I'm like, man, we could have done this in person.
But we're making it happen. So first, thanks for being here. And I introduced you a little bit, but maybe tell all the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Simon Yeager. I'm, as James said, a technical evangelist at Microsoft. I'm within with the evangelism group of Microsoft, and I focus primarily on lots of Office extensibility, the Microsoft Graph, and lately also tons of Xamarin. So that's, I guess, is kind of what's going to be the topic of today, kind of how I merged the world of Microsoft Graph and Xamarin, essentially.
Now, had you been doing any mobile development before Xamarin at all, or did you just kind of jump in?
Yeah, for sure. So that's kind of the reason why I wanted to do that, because before doing like Office stuff and even before joining Microsoft, like building games and building apps is what I did. So I've done lots of stuff for all of the different platforms, everything from Android apps to iOS apps to Windows apps with UVP and Windows 8 apps and that kind of stuff. So it was a very natural thing for me to do once I got to focus on the Microsoft Graph. I'm like, of course, I got to make an application with this. And then it's like, all right, Xamarin native. Of course, I want to use, reuse my code and write C#, which is like the programming language that I love. So it was a very, very natural path for me to take.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, I had talked previously at an Ignite, and I've worked with the Office 365 team on integrating some of their SDKs into Xamarin applications. So essentially, how I thought of that use case is like, listen, you're an enterprise. And you're using Office 365, you're using Azure AD, and you want to pull in some data, maybe it's documents, maybe it's contact information, and build an application. But that was a few years ago. Now, the Microsoft Graph, like, what is it? Is it a replacement for the Office 365 APIs? Is it a complement? Like, what is our graph? Because everyone's talking about graphs. Like, Facebook has a graph.
Yeah.
Like, other people have graphs. We have our own graphs. Like, what does it even mean?
And we don't even just have one graph. Like, we had an Azure AD graph, and then we had an Office graph, and now there's a Microsoft graph. Well, I guess to start off, or kind of what I try to do is to motivate what it is to essentially paint what's the problem out there that it's trying to solve. So if you look at all of the beautiful ecosystem of Microsoft REST APIs, like there's APIs for OneDrive, there's APIs for Outlook, for Azure AD, for OneNote, and lots of different stuff. And the thing with all of these APIs is that they kind of have their own personality, their own way of for you to interact with them, their own conventions, their own protocols, and it makes it kind of hard for you as a developer to go in and engage with one and retake that, whether it's resources or skills or application code, and use that on that next API that you want to use with from Microsoft. So what it's trying to solve is just that problem. The Microsoft Graph is trying to be a proxy for you to reach all of those different services with one single endpoint. So it's like one way of doing it with one convention, one way of embracing open standards so that like you can reuse what you know and that valuable application code that you've written.
So it's kind of like you have your standard REST, like we adhering to REST. I'm assuming it's passing back JSON.
Yep.
Okay.
It's all of that stuff. It's JSON, it's REST. You've got OAuth authentication protocols. It's OData for working with and baking with your data. So everything that we kind of love, I guess.
It's kind of like when I think of the bot framework that we have here at Microsoft, right? There's all these different bot frameworks, just like we have all these different services.
Yeah.
And some of them do very unique things that maybe you really need to integrate with. Like if you're creating an application that only has to do with OneDrive and that's all you care about, maybe you really want to go deep into there. But almost like an abstraction that can get you down into a common surface area of all these different areas at Microsoft, just like the bot framework does that for bots.
Exactly.
So the graph framework, is it just RESTful endpoints or is it an SDK or how would users even where would we even find information about it? Like, what were the use cases? Like, you're like before we get to the SDK, like, what are the use cases? You're like, hey, I want to build an application. Like, what are good use cases that people would want to use the Microsoft Graph?
Yeah. So I guess one thing is very natural, like a very natural way of like, hey, I want to get an ability to perhaps store application data in OneDrive or OneDrive for Business with like, you know, one single endpoint. So that's kind of a very straightforward way of finding a use case. But then there's also more complex scenarios. For instance, if you wanted to build an application that manages some kind of property, for instance, where you would have files being stored for these properties and you would have conversations going, and then you would have some kind of way of dealing with tasks and storing details and working with data in here. So there's many ways of finding very nifty use cases for the Microsoft Graph. And what we'll see is in the sample is trying to do just that. It's kind of using or building like a traditional application and then finding how do we use the Microsoft Graph in here? And it makes perfect sense once you actually look at the different pieces that you have. I mean, all of them have very common, I guess, requirements such as storing files, such as having interaction between users and collaboration and tasks and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
And I mean, if we go ahead and look at, if you'll see my screen here, if you want to find some great resources on getting started and kind of covering of all of the different things that you can do with a Microsoft Graph, graph.microsoft.io is that perfect place to find all of that information for the Microsoft Graph. And you can also explore like, all right, what are these different resources?
All the integrations, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Okay.
So you'll find everything that you want on this page.
Very cool. So here we're seeing, now the Microsoft Graph then, and we're seeing here that these are REST points. And if you scroll down just a little bit, I see that we're developing apps, you get this endpoint. And this is what I think is interesting, is you have this open ID connection. Now, does this mean that I can link into my Office 365, I can link into my Azure AD, I can log in with any of those credentials, or maybe I just have a Microsoft account, right? When I go to visualstudio.com, I log in with my Microsoft account. I can do any of those, or what can I do?
Yeah, so you're actually getting into that one of those problems that we're trying to solve, like where every REST API has their own OAuth mechanism, whether that's MSA, Microsoft accounts, or if you have an Office 365 account, which are different authentication stacks. They're both identity providers, but they're very different. Now, that's exactly what, with the Microsoft Graph, you're able to use both of those. And it's actually done in what's called an authentication model version 2 or so.
Okay.
That's where you register your application now, and it's able to take both MSA, Microsoft accounts, and accounts from Azure Active Directory, which are essentially Office 365 accounts.
Okay, cool. So essentially, when we go to this here, this graph.microsoft.com, we'll have this in the show notes, the docs. This is a great page because if you just scroll down and you're like, hey, listen, I want to do anything with that data, right? I want users, groups, files. Like essentially, the Microsoft Graph is like perfect for your application. Like, I want to do Excel, I want to do people, I want to do notes. And building this type of application, especially in the enterprise, I can imagine that people already have as Office 365, but they may be using other services here at Microsoft where they want to mix and match. It seems like it's the
for
perfect.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So you started, and the reason, like I said, I wanted to bring you on is because you built this application that you talked about. I think it was called, like, it has something to do with properties, right? It was like properties manager or something like that. And I figured I could try to demo it and try to figure it out. But I wanted to have you on to kind of walk through the technology of how would you get started with Xamarin? What does the application do? Where are the integrations? And let you talk through it. So if you just want to go to town, I'm just going to poke some questions. Go for it.
Yes, sir. All right. So I guess the best way to describe what we've done here is to showcase what we're talking about, showcase the application. So what I'm going to do is to walk you through it fairly quickly, and then we'll dig into the code and see how things are actually working here. So I'm going to start to show you the UVP version or the UVP app, and then I'll show you the Android version. Now, I didn't bring my MacBook, so I'm kind of sad that I'm not able to show you the iOS version, but I got a picture here essentially proving that, if you can trust me, that it is working on an iOS device. And actually, if you go to this page on the Microsoft Graph GitHub repository, you're actually able to download all of the code for the sample and run it on any device that you want to run it on.
Very cool. Very cool.
So let's begin here. So what we tried to build here was a sample that was, I guess, more than a sample. What you'll find out there is tons of great feature samples that showcase kind of how you make or do something, and then there's another sample that shows how do you do something else. What we wanted to try to do here is to make something that ties everything together, ties all these features together, and make something where it kind of looks like a real-world application. That's been the intention. So this is essentially an app that some of you might kind of think that, hey, this is something that I could download from the App Store or Google Play or Windows Store, and that's kind of been the idea.
Yeah, some of the kind of the best samples is like, oh, I would literally actually use this on a day-to-day basis or something that I probably browsed for before. Like, those are kind of like, the cool type of examples, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. This one is for if you're managing properties, or perhaps if you're a landowner maintaining different properties. This is the application that this is an application that tries to be a tool for you. So to showcase that, we need to log in first and foremost, and I'm going to sign into an Office 365 account that I already have.
So this is an Office 365 account. So we're going to see the onmicrosoft.com.
Correct.
And are you using the Microsoft authentication library at this point, or are you using an AD or a different login to do that?
So this one is actually using Active Directory Authentication Library, ADL. Mainly, one of the main reasons for it was that ADL is working great with Xamarin. It's got support for all these different platforms. So that was one of the reasons that we wanted to use ADL in this case.
Perfect.
So once you come into this application, first and foremost, this is a UVP version of the application. So you'll expect that this is probably going to run on everything from a phone to maybe a HoloLens, but for sure my own Windows 10 desktop PC. So we try to implement some of those responsive features of it, essentially. But I'm going to kind of, make it look kind of like a phone by keeping this size. So right at the bat, we have the ability to see all of the different properties that I might own or manage. And I can also add new ones. But I'll go into just one that's already made here. And what we see right away is tons of details. We have details in terms of a description of the property. We got details about how many rooms we have, what's the living size, what's the lot size, and what does it cost to operate this property. And we can go in and we can edit these details, and you'll find that things are kind of flowing as you'd expect in a UVP application with animations and that kind of stuff. Now, a couple more tabs here is one of them is a conversation. So we can keep a discussion going on about this property. For instance, if we are multiple property owners or property managers, we might want to have a discussion going about, for instance, I was here yesterday and I did something. And we can post that in there. And anyone that signs into this application with from the same tenant, Office 365 tenant, is going to be able to see this conversation.
Oh, cool. So maybe you were, maybe you're a landlord, for instance, and you're having a conversation with your tenant, and then they have access. Like everyone's on your tenant, but they only have access to certain properties, and you could control
exactly.
the flow or something like that. That'd be very cool. Yeah, because you're gonna have. I'm thinking as a landlord, right? You're gonna have maybe photos of the property. You're gonna have your PDFs of the signed contracts. I shove these documents in some folder randomly and I forget about them and there's no really good, like I have to put it in DocuSign, I have to put stuff over here, right? It's all over the place.
Yeah.
But it seems really cool to have this kind of paper trail, if you will. I think that's what's really important is getting into property management, even just renting. I went through this actually personally recently, is kind of having that paper trail, and it's really important to have.
Yeah, for sure. So just as you're saying, you got the abilities to store the files. Just pointing out that, if you upload here with on the Windows, you'll have the Windows experience. Running this on a phone will get you that phone experience of browsing for files. And then we can go in here and just finally just add a task like, James, do something, please, and have it in there. And we'll say that, he completed it. Or actually, we'll complete it on the Android version. So let's just put it up here on the side of it. And I'll just showcase that it kind of works the same way and do a little bit faster. It's going to sign me right away in because we're using ADL. And what ADL is also doing is just storing those credentials neatly for us so that we don't have to think about that. And what you'll see is like it's the same application, but it is more, I guess it embraces the platform and what makes the platform unique in terms of the UI, which is something that I felt was an important part of how do you make something very real and how do you make a real case, essentially, a real app. Well, UI and UX is a very important piece of that. So that's the reason why in this sample, we've spent lots of time making sure that the UI experiences are going to look like they belong on the platform. So as I walk through this one, you'll see that it's got the Google material design icons, but it's the same app, right? You've got the same kind of details. The conversation is here, files, and we can complete the task like so. So it's the same kind of app, but on, in a different flavor, depending on which the platform is.
Well, and it's nice too, because, that's one of the strongest points of Xamarin is that you're building these applications. All of the UI may be separate or maybe the same as Xamarin Forms, but you can tweak it and still make it look extremely new. So even your icons, right? So your icons are different per platform because it's an Android look and feel or an, a Windows look and feel or an iOS look and feel, which is super important. But I'm imagining here that a bulk of this code isn't the user interface, right? It's a lot of forms and a lot of data just to spice it up with a few material designs on Android. But I'm imagining that the bulk of it here is in the shared code.
Correct. And I guess for one that may have, for instance, seen one of the earlier episodes of the Xamarin Show where you cover MVVM, that would be kind of a natural way of, I guess, abstracting that piece of code into a shared project. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at this, which is like has these very, very, very native looking UIs, it's kind of like, how do you do that? How do you make sure that you, extract those pieces which are platform specific? And how do you deal with those challenges? Now, that's exactly also what we try to showcase and try to deal with in this sample. So if we look at the sample structure, as James was saying, there's a shared project, which is that portable project. And then there are these individual platform projects, if you will. If we go ahead and expand this, you'll see that, all right, with the folder structure, it does kind of look like the MVVM pattern here. We have view models that kind of gives it away. But we do have, if we look into each and every single platform project, there's a views folder. And that's the way we achieve the kind of extracted views where they make sense to be extracted. and keep the larger code, I guess, shared in that portable class project. Now, just a quick pointer, if you want to run this on your own and kind of get started, what you'll look for is that constants.cs file. And it's got a bunch of properties in here, but there are only three that you will need to essentially care about, which are the authority, client ID, and redirect URI. So what you'll need to do, and we'll put links to that in the show notes, is to get out to the Azure Active Directory and register your application. And when you've done that, you'll have an authority, a client ID, and a redirect URI that you'll pop in here, and you'll be good to go to actually run the sample on your own.
Nice. Is there a sample site set up already, or is there deployment scripts essentially to kind of get it going?
All you need to do is just really to go to any Azure AD tenant, and it has an application tab. Okay. You know, for you to register your application, and you'll just say what's my name, and you'll get a client ID, and you'll just put in any redirect URI. So I kind of just made up anything here, and that's where the way Ada works is that it's going to redirect to any redirect URI that you prompted to, and this is just the way that we figure out that all right, you're done because it redirected to that URI. Oh,
okay, gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah. But you could, I mean, definitely you could go ahead and use that V2 model if you wanted to, and simply go under the authorization menu in the graph.microsoft.com, and you will find how you do that. It's super, super simple. And you have Azure AD, and then there's the V2 endpoint.
Very cool.
So if we drill a little bit into the code again, and we can ask ourselves, all right, how do we achieve this MVVM pattern? The MVVM pattern is very, very, I guess, natural if we look at the UVP project. In here, we've actually worked with MVVM for a while. There's lots of support that comes in very naturally when you're typing the XAML. But for the other platforms, it may not be super straightforward. So the way that we do that is essentially by bringing in a library, which is called MVVM Cross.
Cool.
It's one of those very popular MVVM Cross or MVVM libraries for Xamarin. Works great, super simple to get started with. All you do is to just bring up the NuGet package manager in every project and pull it into your project, and you're essentially you're good to go at this point.
Yeah. So we haven't talked about too much of the MVVM frameworks yet, besides what's built into Xamarin Forms. So this application was not built with Xamarin Forms. You went the traditional route. You built out this shared code here. We're seeing extensions, models, view models, and then you've abstracted views in each platform. And I always get a lot of questions like, hey, you know, I want to have MVVM in place, or I've already done it in Windows application. How do I do data binary? Because iOS and Android, they don't have it built in, and you got to get there somehow. It's easy to kind of rig up your own, just like kind of subscribe to property change notifications. But MVVM Lite and MVVM Cross are very two popular frameworks, and I've worked with both. And MVVM Cross is really cool because on Android, it'll actually tie into some of the views, which is cool. But essentially, think of MVVM MVVM Cross, I guess, as the glue. I think they would put it as the glue between your shared code and your UIs. You're still building native UIs on each platform, but you're able to share maybe a little bit more by not having to write those bindings manually,
yeah,
I guess,
yeah.
Right?
That's a beautiful thing about like Xamarin Native is that you could use your skills and maybe you know, maybe you're exceptionally good at building iOS views with the iOS designer. You could go into that designer and build those views. And that's just awesome thing about it, which is exactly what is actually contained with this sample. So in this sample, you'll see how do you build like a native UI, and also how do you bind that to that core project.
Very cool. Now, for like the login view, for instance, you just brought in, I assume, the ADAL, the library, right, to do that?
Actually, it's a little bit more abstracted. The login view actually brings in the graph service, which we'll look at, which is just your way of calling the graph service. And the graph service itself is the one that pulls in the ADAL. And that essentially is taken care of by MVVM Cross. It allows you to just type essentially what you want, and it's going to get you what you want.
Okay.
And the way it's done is essentially by, if you look at app.cs, anything that starts with MVX, by the way, is something that's related to MVVM cross. And here we define an app and we just say, all right, here's a couple of services that we have, which are implemented in the core project. Now, there's more services that we have, but they're implemented in the platform projects. And I'll show you why we do that. But finally, we'll also say what's the starting point for this application, which in our case is naturally going to be, well, the login view, because we have to log in first and foremost. If we look at the login view, I want to show you bindings here. In the login view, we have the login command, which essentially is the logic for what's going to happen when someone pushes a login button. And in the base, there is an isLoading property as well. So there are essentially two properties or two entities that you can bind towards in the login view model. And if you look at, we can begin at the UVP platform project, actually, because this is a very natural place for bindings to take place in the XAML. And scrolling down, there is a button, which is that button that I clicked to sign in. Yep. What it does is that it's got that command, and it's binding to that login command. And then there's a visibility, which is binding to that isLoading property, and it's also got a converter. Converter is kind of like a way of transforming a value into something else so that it fits the property that we're binding to on the, I guess, the UI component. So in this case, isLoading is a Boolean, but this one needs an enumerator that is simply says visible or collapsed. So we need to write a converter that just transforms that value into an appropriate value here.
Sure. So if if anyone's been doing WPF, UWP, or Xamarin Forms work, this is going to look very familiar because this is just the UWP project. And then on the Android side of things, it's probably going to look a little bit different because you're still in the Android XML, I assume, right?
Exactly. So the Android project, which is kind of like iOS project in the sense that it does have like a backing C# file, but it doesn't have anything in here.
Oh, okay.
That's because we build those views. For Android, we build those in kind of like layout files, which are those XML ones that you talked about. We can open the login activity, and instead of looking into the designer, we can look into the source, and we'll find the button.
Yep.
And it's got one of those MVX terms in there as well. We can kind of figure out, all right, that's probably MVVM cross here. But it's fairly, I think it makes sense what's doing here. Like, it's binding that, again, login command to the click property, and it's binding the isLoading property on the view model to the visibility property on the button, and using a converter again to convert that value into the appropriate format. So again, it's kind of the same thing that we're achieving, but more in the flavor of how would you build a UI on an Android platform.
Sure, that makes sense. And essentially with MVVM cross, you're doing less code in the code behind of that actual view and a little bit just putting those bindings into the actual Android XML or into the iOS view specifically for each of them, which kind of makes a lot of sense in of how you'd want to abstract that away. And even when I do it without a framework like MVVM cross or MVVM Lite, I kind of do that little thing where I'm just like, I really want to modify just the smallest bit of code possible that's in the view or not in the view to do that. That's a very nice approach, yeah.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing about this, that once you've done this, we can make any changes to, for instance, how logging occurs on all of the platforms by simply editing the view model. Yeah. We don't have to make that change in every single platform project. We can do it in one place, eliminate bugs, make feature updates or anything, and it's going to get applied to all of those other places. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, so if you want to then maybe change it from using ADAL to something else, then you change it just in the shared code, you're good to go. And you can see here, this is the iOS one, right? And you're doing as in the code behind binding. That's it. That's all the code. That's pretty cool.
That's all. And it's more of a way that how you would do it on, how would a UI, iOS developer be familiar to developing code essentially. So you would put it in the view did load and creating what's called the binding sect, which is sort of the context between the log and view, or the glue, if you will, between log and view and the log and view model. And then it's the same sort of approach. You're binding to the login command. You have the visibility property of the sign in button, binding it to the is loading, and using a converter again to transform that value. So same idea, but in a different way, depending on the platform that we're in.
Cool. So let's say that they've already logged in. Now we get to the meat of the application, right? So how do we start accessing the graph? We've already gotten our token. Let's just assume that ADAL does its thing. It's great. How do we actually get access to the SDK? Is there a NuGet that I bring in, or is it endpoints, or how's this thing handled?
So there's you actually have a couple different ways to do this, and it depends on really what you want to do.
Okay.
So the first thing that to kind of know about the Microsoft Graph is that it's sort of split, or I guess developed in branches. So there's a version 1.0, and then there's a beta branch,
okay.
And there's SDKs for version 1.0, there's for Java, there's for Objective-C, which you actually can bring into Swift with bridging headers, and then there's for Xamarin. So you could, if you're happy with everything that's within version 1, you can bring in an SDK which has all the models and everything set up for you, and it's super simple to get started. Now, the sample, it's actually targeting the beta branch, which meant that, all right, we had to implement those REST calls on our own because there aren't any SDKs available for the beta branch. However, those resources that we were consuming in the Microsoft Graph when I built the sample, they are actually now within version 1. So I'm actually thinking about switching to the SDKs just because they're really beautiful to use and easy to, it's just, you know, you don't have to maintain this.
Yeah, so essentially if the model changes or something else. So if you want to be cutting edge, you would go down this approach that you're showing here. Like, oh, there's some brand new API that hasn't made it into the SDK just yet. I'm living on the edge, right?
Yeah.
Someone tweeted at me. I was tweeting that I installed Android 7.1, the beta betas, and they're like, it's not on your daily phone. I'm like, I live on the edge. I want everything. I get it. So if you're living on the edge and you want to access the beta, because we're always, I'm assuming the graph is always revving, new APIs coming up as services release. So you may want to go down this route, at least know how to do it. I think that's what's probably important is how do I do it if I need to go down that approach? Else you would just consume an SDK, I assume, as a NuGet package and go to town.
Yeah. And it's cool. Nothing wrong if you want to combine them as well. I mean, you could use the SDK and then just use REST calls for those pieces that aren't implemented.
Okay.
But as you're saying, like, if you know how to do it, that's going to make it so much easier to not just pulling in parts from the beta branch, but also if things happen to go wrong, you'll be much more having a better chance of understanding what's actually going wrong here.
Gotcha. Okay.
But actually, to show you why it's kind of simple to combine both the SDK and and just making bare bone REST calls essentially, which is that in the SDK, essentially the only thing that you do when you instantiate a client in the Microsoft Graph SDK is that you give it an access token.
Sure.
And if you're already combining that, you already have a way of getting it. You can just put that access token on a bare-bone REST call, or you could give it to the graph client, and you're ultimately good to go.
Okay, yeah, and that's the most important part, is that I've logged in somehow, I have this token, and that token is going to be sent to authenticate every single time when I make any REST call with the SDK or with this HTTP call.
Exactly.
Yeah, cool.
And if you want to get a good overview of what kind of graph calls this sample actually is doing, the way that the sample is built is that what we actually saw in the beginning, that if I go into the constructor, you'll see that their interfaces only provided in the constructors.
Okay.
And those interfaces are here, and you can find, if you go into them, what are the methods on this interface, which is ultimately what is actually going to be implemented. The reason why it's interfaces is that that's kind of the way we inject the services with MVVM cross. So we define what's this going to be like, what were we expecting the service to provide us with, and then it doesn't matter if this is implemented like the graph service, which is implemented in the core project, But then there's other services like the authentication service, which is Edo. There's an implementation for every platform project of that service, because it's more platform dependent than the graph services. The graph service it's going to be similar everywhere, whereas authentication on every platform is a little bit different. We just want to make sure to store places, I guess, in different places.
Sure.
So that's the way it's kind of done.
Cool. So it seems like you're able to get users, you're able to authenticate, you're able to get the files. So anything that you were kind of showing in the application, it's there for you to use.
For sure. Yes. And it makes it kind of easy also for you to, if you want to just take a piece out of this sample and just plug this service into your own, you can do that. Super simple. Grab the interface, grab MVVM Cross into your project, and then you'll be ready essentially to go and consume that.
Okay.
Now, if you want to, if you look at the graph service, you'll see how essentially all the calls are being made. So there are a couple of helper methods that transform the JSON into C# objects, which is done with the Newtonsoft JSON library. And what we're doing with the helper methods is just to say essentially, all right, I'm expecting one object or I'm expecting many objects.
Okay.
So it's just if it's an array or if it's not an array. And then we're providing what's the URL to this. And if you wanted to make this call on your own, you could essentially just use the endpoint for the Microsoft Graph, graph.microsoft.com, and then you would specify what's the branch, and if that would be beta, that would be beta, or if it's version 1.0, you would put that in. Oh, let's go with beta, let's live on the edge.
Yeah.
And then you would just put that piece in there. So
okay, gotcha.
Super, super straightforward to do that. Remove this.
So then you have get one async, get many. So essentially you've abstracted it away, even your HTTP calls, because normally you're like, I need to go get this, I need to go get this, I need to go get this. And then that will go out, handle it for you. Can we take a look at one of those, like the get many, for instance?
Absolutely. You can actually follow along. So if we start from this place where we have, all right, we're going to get ourselves here. And if we F12 into that, and we'll be taken into another helper method that simply just says, it keeps the same URL, but it just attaches the fact that, all right, this is going to be a get method.
Yep.
And then it's just going to put that over into a send async method that does the that makes sure essentially that there's a token present in your request.
Okay, gotcha.
So what it's doing is just putting it on the request. And if it's not there, it's going to pop open Edel and ask you to sign in and just attach the token to your request.
Yeah, or for instance, maybe your Edel token has expired and it needs to go get a brand new one, and it'll revalidate a new token.
Correct.
Yeah, cool.
And I noticed that if we F12 in interfaces, we don't get a lot.
Yeah.
Instead, you could pop open into, because at this point, we're using the HTTP service. And if you wanted to look into how that one is built, which is also super straightforward with the HTTP methods doing different things depending on what it is, and just throwing it over to the built-in HTTP client. So it's very simple, and it's kind of just abstracting away those different calls.
Yeah, so it's essentially super drop-dead simple HTTP calls that anyone's probably done. I mean, if anyone's seen me do any demos on the Xamarin show, I'm always going off, doing some gets, getting some data. Maybe it's weather, maybe it's stock information, maybe it's something from Azure, right? Even Azure exposed a REST API. You're getting them, you're using standard HTTP calls, and then it gets stuff back. And then, what's this puppy? What you got going on here?
Well, if you want to do this without code and kind of explore what's the responses that Microsoft Graph is going to deliver to you, you can do that call using what's called a Graph Explorer, which is on that graph.microsoft.com page. Super cool tool where you can essentially just type in those requests, specify the branch, the HTTP methods, hit submit, And what it's going to do is to make that call for you, attach the tokens and all that stuff, and you're able to see what are you actually going to get from that request.
Oh, cool.
And that way you can kind of explore the graph without building an app or anything. And it's a good starting point if you just want to see what's it all about and what you can do and what you can expect.
Yeah. And then what you do is you copy that, right? You copy right. that, and then you take it to JSON to C#.com.
Actually, have you seen this?
Oh, I think I know what you're about there to do. It's pretty great.
Which one is it? I'm going to search. This thing is awesome. Paste JSON as classes.
Boom.
So right, if you got it on the clipboard, yeah, this is awesome. So, but I've been using that page a lot. I can tell you that.
Yeah. So that's what I like to do. I either like to paste it or I like to put in JSON as C#.com. Get my C# models, and that's the instance where, listen, like, you don't have an SDK. The SDK will set up the models for you.
Yeah.
But in this instance, we're not going to do it. Now the question is, so let's say you're using some stuff on the beta, does it get merged into 1.0 or does it get merged into 1.1, or like how does that happen? Like, as a developer, that concerns me is like, okay, well maybe they come out with a 1.5 and mm-hmm. is it breaking changes, or if it gets put into 1.0, does that mean no breaking changes? Like, what's the protocol here?
So as long as you're just a, I guess a kind of pointer. If you're on the beta branch, you're consuming or making calls here, those you I guess kind of should expect to be changed. Or if you're relying on them, it might break you.
Okay.
One of those things is just great because what they're doing is actually to gather lots of feedback. That's the reason why they're kind of in the beta branch. So they're getting feedback from the community saying, what do you like about this call? What do you want us to change? And they're actually doing that. So when they're changing something, is usually because the community said that they wanted it changed. Now, if that happens, you'll kind of know that, you'll kind of feel like, yay, this is not the way I work with webhooks usually. This would probably be changed and then usually gets changed. If it kind of works, I've noted that I built lots of apps on the beta branch and it just works flawlessly. So I guess I'm also a little bit of a guy living on the edge, but as I've seen, they're working or being stable for a while, they get put into the version 1.0 currently. That's what at least what everything has been up until now. So everything that's been into the beta branch, been there for a while, been stable, that's been eventually put into the version 1.0 branch. But it's still in the beta branch, so
okay.
You'll still have the same API, if you will, and then you can just swap over to the version 1.0 if you wanted to, and kind of feel a bit more safe.
That makes sense. So even if you're experimenting with a beta for a while, and then it gets put into 1.0, you just toggle it over essentially, and you're good to go. Cool.
Correct.
Awesome. So it seems pretty straightforward. Then you're going off making these calls, bringing it back. And it seems like you could put, you could post, you can patch, you do your standard REST calls. It's just a REST API. I mean, that's a beautiful thing is when I think about it, is that it's just a standard API. So if you've done any REST calls before or done anything in ASP.NET, you kind of understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And it's really nice that it's JSON. I was messing around with the Office 365 API for a while, and it was like, some of it was like old data feeds, and it was like this, and you're like, oh, there's like so much going on. It felt very, it didn't feel as modern as I wanted it to do, and this seems super modern. Especially using things like ADAL to do that. And I really like this architecture. This is really cool reference architecture. I might steal some code from this.
Yeah, please do. There's a couple of things that one might need to be aware of. And we also try to point those out in the code. And here's one of them, which is, I believe, not true anymore because that's been changed. But it's done with a different kind of set of APIs that you'll do this through. But if you wanted to upload a file which is larger than 4 megabytes, we can't do that using the Microsoft Graph. That would be something you'd need to do with a bare-bone OneDrive APIs, essentially.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But that's been implemented, but it's just in a different way now where you create a session instead of what's called an upload session, and you upload the fragments instead. So we try to keep pointers to those things in the code, so that you can be aware of when things like that should be taken into account.
Yeah, also if you're uploading a 100 meg file, you might want to put that in a background service, and you may want to adhere to each platform's way of uploading really big files.
Yeah. And the limitation like this is probably a hint that maybe you should do it in a different way.
Exactly. Cool. Cool. Simon, is there anything else you want to show off at all, or any last pointers, tips, and tricks?
I guess just this is the repository for the sample. It's on the Microsoft Graph GitHub repository. You'll find the details about how to get started on this thing and how to build it in the readme.md file. So definitely a good place to get started if you want to run the sample. And also, if you want to learn more about it and kind of dig more into more the design part, how the UIs were built natively, or perhaps the Xamarin part of how it kind of works with the services and dependency injection, I do have blog posts covering those topics on my blog at simonyaeger.com. And if there's any changes that you would like to see on the sample, I mean, please go ahead and reach out, use the issues in the repository, or do contribute to the sample yourself. I would be very happy to see that happen.
Very cool. Well, awesome. This has been awesome. I really like to see it live, sell the code, love the architecture. Yeah, Simon, thank you so much for being our first digital guest and coming all the way live from Sweden, right? That's where you're at right
thanks
now?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, awesome. Well, this has been the Xamarin Show. Until next time.